Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, Kurt, and welcome back.
What the hell is that, Aaron?
Well, you're home. I was welcoming you back. My
God. Hello, Kurt. It's like, okay, that creepy greeter table for two. Good God. And you're
keep
like,
you on your toes.
Yeah, something. That was terrifying.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine. But the Democrats, I don't know that the Democrats are fine. We had a bit of a split decision this week between the progressive socialist wing of the Democrat Party and the establishment wing, especially when we're looking at Wisconsin and Minnesota. Kurt, what say you? Is the party moving left or are Democratic voters drawing a line?
First of all, I say, phew. Dodged a bullet there in Wisconsin. Holy cow. That was looking bad. Wisconsin, because of its prominence in the 2028 general election map, that is not one, if you are the Democratic Party, you want to lose power. You want to have the reins of that state, if at all humanly possible. So I think relief is what Democrats, frankly, are feeling based on the results of what we saw in Wisconsin, particularly. You know, and again, I think it's we're seeing split decisions cut a couple different ways, right? We're seeing one, even in Michigan, it was close with Syed and Stevens. I mean, that's as close as you can get, less than 1%. Obviously, in Wisconsin, it was still relatively close. If anything, I am calling into question the polling data experts who kept predicting blowouts left and right when that was hardly the case from what we saw. And then the one blowout that happened, which I know we'll talk about in a little bit, but like Mike Lindell in Minnesota, it's like that wasn't as forecasted either polling wise. So if anything, I think that the people who work in the voodoo magic that is polling, which I'm certain is just a dartboard with numbers and a monkey throwing darts at it, and that's what they were report that I think that's the story of the primaries, more than right, left, center, left, far right, far left.
I think that the story is more that people are still buying the vibes game versus anything else. The media is kind of trying to give itself a self-fulfilling prophecy about these insurgent, commanding lead socialist Democrats. And then it comes out, whoopsie poopsie, actually, it's under 1% for both of those races, whether right. It was Michigan for El Sayed or Wisconsin for Hong here. My question is, is this showing now that Democrats, if they stand up, the establishment stands up and puts money in and puts the fight in to stop the socialists, can they actually do it? And do Democrats want to do that? Because that is an enthused base. That enthused socialist base, however, is splitting the Democrat base because Black voters are turning historically away. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is something that Rahm Emanuel actually has recently been talking about, how the Black vote is the vote that we need to be looking at and watching how they have moved and this progressive socialist fever that has captured parts of the Democratic Party. They're missing the boat on that. It's one thing to call yourself a socialist when you're a PhD grad at Columbia versus what we're trying to reach real working class voters, which should be the goal of the Democratic Party in places like Michigan and Wisconsin. And I also think it just shows that the pitfalls of being weak, the pitfalls of following groupthink, punditry, polling, and not getting out there and speaking out when you have the chance. I can only imagine what we would have seen in Michigan had if everyone knew it was a 1% race, that it was a real dogfight to the very end. I suspect you would have seen a lot more Democratic figures speak up a little bit earlier for Haley Stevens, and that probably would have gotten her across the finish line had they actually activated on that. But they were afraid. They waited. They held their powder until the very, 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 very last minute, some of these people. And it's like, what good did that do ultimately? If you're making your decisions as a politician and you're talking about the trajectory of the Democratic Party and you're waiting on the polls from CNN or whoever, and that's driving whether or not you have the courage to just say what you think, you're get the hell out of the business, man, because you're just that weak sauce ain't cutting it.
I mean, who's afraid of the Democrat base? It seems Democrats, because it's the base that has this socialist push and this socialist rise. And, you know, in one instance, you have James Carville saying, hey, I will not be in a party where Hassan Piker is welcome and a leader. And then a week later, he's more than happy to cozy up with El Sayed, who only kind of wants to distance himself from Piker, but not really. This big tent that Democrats keep talking about, it's collapsing on itself every time they try to put up a stake that says we're not going to have socialists in our party. And it's fair for Republicans and Democrats. But if you're cozying up to a psycho like Hassan Piker, you know what you need to do? Not only be completely disavow him, disavow his rhetoric and his hatred of this country, but you have to continue to do that, because you don't just get to say, oh, I've changed my mind on that position and think that's good enough for a general electorate anymore, because it's not.
Yeah.
And this big tent party, ooh, I mean, you guys are just tearing it down from within right now, because you guys all seem scared of your base, that socialist base that's turning out, bringing in new voters, bringing in young voters, but you're doing it at the risk of alienating the rest of your base, your own morals and standards, and just all in the name of blind victory. I've seen Democrats bloodthirsty before. This cycle feels a little different. And maybe it's because it's Trump again. But that is where I'm sick of the hypocrisy of this big tent that's more than willing to welcome that psychopath in. And I will call him that, because his beliefs, Hassan Piker's beliefs, are one flew over the cuckoo's nest. But Democrats,
I agree that Piker, like, I personally believe there's no place for someone like him in any organized political party in America, period. I also think it's been interesting watching characters, and I call them all characters, because to me, this is all, you know, WWE cosplay in politics. AOC recently trying to walk a little bit of this back, calling, you know, woke one, you know, like a little crazy, went a little too far, and trying to, what I think is pretty obvious, reposition herself a little bit for, you know, what might lie ahead in 2028. But, you know, for the OG, you know, woke socialist type of firebrand, not that she used those words to describe herself per se, but that's really what she represents and symbolizes, for her to now take the cadence of, yep, that went too far. Like, she's gotten the memo. I'll say this, like, credit to her. She got the memo and she's saying it out loud, which is more than a lot of people do in politics. Whether or not it's going to work, whether or not she can reinvent herself yet again, we'll see. But it's interesting to me that she is the one taking that public posture as of late.
Well, speaking of woke, I think that can bring us to our next topic here, which is half-baked. These thoughts that never really make it all the way through. Now, I'll say two things about this new segment we're doing, half-baked. One, half-baked is one of my favorite flavors of ice cream. If you haven't had it, it's absolutely delicious, Ben and Jerry's.
What
and
are
I don't,
you talking about?
If you've never had it, it's fantastic. Also, the movie Half-Baked from the late 90s is a hilarious movie. If you've never seen it, you gotta watch it. It's hilarious. Dave Chappelle, very funny. But we're using this segment to talk about things that aren't completely thought through. And what do you know? When we're talking about trying to re-identify ourselves, the WNBA can't identify what a woman is. And their current league standard is, if you attest that you're a woman, you're a woman. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun when Inez Kanter-Freedom goes for the WNBA draft. Why is it so difficult for Democrats, for the liberals, for the blue-haired Bettys of America, the purple-haired, you know, Pamelas? Why can't they just be honest and say, you have to be born a biological female? They are so worried. Again, who's afraid of the Democrat base? It seems the Democrats, even in corporations right now, AOC is trying to walk back woke 1.0, but now we're in woke 2.0. And what do you know? It's even crazier. A league built for women, for female sports, can't even define what a woman is because they're so scared of the Democrat woke base. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know, Kerr. What do you think?
Half-baked. This is one of those issues that perpetually drives me. First of all, I have issues with the WNBA just as a business enterprise who, for reasons past my understanding, refuse to protect their golden goose in Caitlin Clark. Just watching her get obliterated and assaulted on the court every day, and they don't do anything to protect her. That's nuts. I question the business acumen of this enterprise right now when you can't do for Caitlin Clark what the NBA did for Michael Jordan back in the day.
The basics.
Yes. Two, again, this is making an issue that doesn't need to be an issue. And their refusal to just go where 99% of Americans would go with this question, and just say, yeah, you can't play in the WNBA unless you were born a biological woman. This shouldn't be controversial, frankly. And to people who make it controversial, go fuck off, because this is ridiculous at this point. Like, I am a feminist. I believe in women empowerment. I believe that women have been given a raw deal pretty much through the entirety of human history. And the idea that a biological man could hijack what it is to be a woman is insulting. It is degrading. It is, you cannot be a feminist and be okay with this in this world.
There's nothing more masculine than coming in and taking everything from women and just pushing them aside. Right. Ooh, testosterone men. Woo.
Right. It's like, just again, physically speaking, the biological experience of men are vastly, vastly different than women. And I'm just of the mindset, like, hey, listen, if you have not ever or could not ever have a period, like, you're not playing in women's sports, man. Like, come on. Like, this shouldn't be complicated. And, you know, and whoever it is that's making the call publicly for the WNBA to take these positions, I don't know what you're smoking, but you got to stop, because it's really not good.
Yeah, this is one of those businesses that's now just setting itself on fire from inside. We have seen multiple brands, multiple sports leagues, multiple corporations across the country have to moderate because they know they went too far. And to your point, this is an 80-20, 90-10, almost 99% issue that men, biological men, should not be in female sports and spaces. And yet the league built, the prominent female league in our country for the last 20 years, even as they are growing now in their success, can't even say what it means to be a woman because they're scared, because they're worried that the online activist crowd is going to be more important to them than the actual women they say this league is made for. That is what's half-baked, when you can't even finish the full logical freaking thought. And you know what? The WNBA is going to do it at its own peril. I bet viewership goes down. I bet you crowd attendance is going to go down. I bet, you know, all of this. And here's one of the problems. This doesn't happen, the next WNBA draft, until April of next year. So if they don't get ahead of this, they are going to drive, you know, another 6 months of talking about how ignorant they are because of a half-baked idea.
Yep. Well, speaking of half-baked ideas, my pillow guy. Ugh. Good old Mike Lindell, who, you know, last seen throwing pillows at people at parades.
I mean, that's probably a little better than candy. You throw a Jolly Rancher and it hits a kid in the face. Not that great.
Oof. Yeah. Stick to soft candies, gummies. but for Lindell, who came into, the primary expecting big things, endorsed by President Trump. Very obviously well known. just got obliterated in his primary. But unsurprisingly, is refusing to accept the results of the election, alleging potential issues of fraud and nonsense things of why Republicans in a Republican primary would perpetrate fraud against Mike Lindell. Not totally sure how that adds up, but be that as it may, he's certainly
smoking
something.
That's the half-baked part.
that's the half-baked part. What say you about our good friend Mike Lindell?
I think that Mike Lindell is wrong. I do not think that there is a conspiracy against him. I do not think there was anything that ran afoul. There is no proof as of this point that Republicans did something nefarious in the primary, or Republican voters did something nefarious in the primary against him. Listen, if we want to use like half-baked arguments about voter inconsistency, look at Wisconsin, where Milwaukee, 5 of the 9 USB drives that they arrived for votes the night of, this is true, there was a press conference about it, didn't have the votes on it. That could lead to a question like, what happened there? We should investigate that. But there is nothing in Minnesota that says that. And every time a sore loser screams voter fraud, you undermine the actual legitimacy of protecting voters' elections and election integrity. And that's the half-baked thought on my side of this. Every time we cry wolf or scream fire in a theater, when it actually happens, if it actually happens, you won't be able to identify it or be able to counteract it. And don't get me wrong, there have been elections within the last 5 years that have been overturned for voter fraud in this country. It is not impossible. It happens in this country. But that is not what happened to Mike Lindell. And him continuing to say that, it gives those January 6th vibes. Nobody, No Republican wants that vibe. Nobody thinks that argument or conversation is good for the country or good right. for the election right now. And if he's going to try to keep a media storm around that, he is doing it to the detriment of Republicans, of Republican voters in Minnesota, especially because that Michelle Tafoya race, I think for the Senate, we talked about it last time, is one that could actually come toward Republicans, especially given Flanagan as the Tim Walz lieutenant governor who's now right. trying to run in that race towards the socialist lane. We can't be having that on the airwaves in Minnesota. Crazy won't fly. Say,
Lindell could sabotage that Tafoya if he doesn't drop this. And also there's something said for all the conversation about, you know, the generational divides that we're seeing right now across party lines, some of the establishment folks losing some of the rise of different characters. The one thing that does hold true, whether you like the establishment or not, establishment tactics do work. And I say that because Mike Lindell didn't spend a single dime on running TV ads in his campaign. Not a dime. Maybe that had something to do with why he lost. Even at Wisconsin, Francesca spent, I think, $150,000 on TV, whereas her opponent who ended up winning spent $3 million. You can rail against the consulting class and the establishment all you want, but if you're going to run a campaign and not do traditional things like run TV ads,
yeah,
that may have way more to do with why you end up losing than any conspiracy theory, half-baked nonsense that you can formulate in your own crazy brain.
Yeah, if there's one thing that's fully baked this cycle, it's the importance of TV ads.
TV ads.
They still work. They still work. They work for name ID. They work for message. They work for persuasion. And I know that people hate the profession of politics. But hiring people who know how to do it makes a difference when you run your races. And we've got a few more races coming up here. Primary season, my friends, ain't over yet. We talked about reach races a little bit earlier, but coming up here, we've got in this next week, we've got Alaska, we've got Florida, we've got Wyoming coming up, and then a little bit past that, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Delaware, some of those other races. But Alaska feels
Alaska's
like
a
potential reach race. What do you think, Kurt?
Yeah, we got the Dan Sullivan, Mary Peltola, I think is how you pronounce her last name. But there's a tremendous amount of attention here on Alaska, actually. If Democrats are going to flip the Senate, they have to win in a place like Alaska. Like there's no way to get there, especially with Michigan becoming much more of a toss-up situation right now. Alaska,
and Minnesota.
But there's a real scenario where on election night, Alaska being the furthest away, just geographically speaking, like that will be among the last results that we get that night. Yeah. Like we may all be sitting on pins and needles waiting for Alaska returns to come in to decide the majority in the United States Senate. Could happen.
I think it's fair to say this is one of the reach races that we would both put on our map. It is a reach for Democrats to try and bring in Alaska. It is not completely unfounded that they would elect a Democrat. They don't do it generally in the state. They tend to obviously lean Republican, but there was also the Dan Sullivan versus Dan Sullivan portion of this,
yeah,
where Democrats had another guy named Dan Sullivan register as a Republican to try to run against Senator Dan Sullivan in the primary. Listen, I'm all here for like outside money, right? Like I know how politics works and like, I'm okay. We talked about that earlier this week, but the like, we're going to have somebody from the opposite party run with the same name as you to try to get you messed up, like in your primary. That's kind of a dirty tactic. But I will say this, Alaska voters are very smart voters. And what do I mean by that? These are people who reelected Lisa Murkowski on a write-in vote with the last name Murkowski.
Yep. Murkowski.
You know what I mean? Like, not necessarily the easiest to flow off the tongue or know how to spell. And
they're
so
paying attention.
They pay attention. They pay attention to what gets delivered. Dan Sullivan, I think, is a great senator for Alaska. I think he does a great job. But all the little tactics there about Dan versus Dan. It's a kind of silly season. Season.
That's why we call it the silly season right there. I mean, come on. I mean, and they also have that... when looking particularly at Alaska's impact on the House representatives races, they have that top four system. Mm-hmm. So you can get some really, really interesting outcomes. I mean, I think Alaska could be one of those states that we're going to be talking a lot about on election night. Like, I think it could get a little goofy.
Yeah. See, this is why it's a reach race, because this map, this cycle is like one we've never seen. And it's because of the individualness of each state and each race. And this is why we always tell candidates, you have to run local. You have to run to your state and not make it a national race. And that's what they've been doing in Alaska. So I think it's a super interesting reach race ahead on our map. But
forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
We have some big news in the James Brady briefing room in the White House.
The seldom used James Brady briefing room.
Well, she was out on maternity leave. She before does that, a lot of
still
briefings.
Still seldom loose. Still, compared to previous White House. Okay, well, we'll start with the headline. White House, former White House press secretary, Carolyn.
Not former yet. She's still here.
She's been on maternity leave. She's got two kiddos. I believe I get it. Like she will not be continuing on as the White House press secretary for the sake of her own sanity, which makes total sense to me, by the way.
I want to know, who do you think replaces her most likely on the Republican side? But if you could pick a wild card outsider as well, who are the two you would pick? The one you think it might be and the one you think would be a reach, a stretch, but maybe an outsider
okay.
could do it.
Okay. The one that makes the most sense in terms of capably doing the job is Scott Jennings. Mm-hmm. He is unflappable. And, no one has become a bigger, more successful, Democrats would say the word mouthpiece. I'll just say communicator than Scott Jennings day in and day out. So I think talent wise, he makes the most sense. My reach would be if you want to have fun, if you want to just troll everybody, go pick up Spencer Pratt. He showed some of his communication chops on the trail in L.A. You want to embrace the TMZification of Washington, D.C. Go pick Spencer Pratt. It'd be must see TV.
Not impossible. I just think he's probably too famous for the president, where he would pull a bit more of that light away, where the president always likes it. And this is a different White House press secretary role, I think, than any other, even in the first Trump one, because the president is on the phone with reporters all the time. He answers calls. He returns text messages.
He's his own press secretary, frankly.
He is. He's his own press secretary, and I think the original influencer in our country. But we can do that deep dive later. Homeboy's been wearing his own merch for years. Everybody else is now doing it. but also the president, he gaggles. He regularly talks to the press. He answers their calls and emails. That press secretary role is a little bit different now in terms of those relationships. I do think Caroline did a fantastic job in this role. Whether or not you like the president, whether or not you like Caroline or what her message was, I don't know that you could have cast or built a better person for that role. She's great at the message. She's great at delivering it. She's quick on her feet. She's unapologetic. And she always kind of did it with a smile, right? I don't think I've ever seen, even where Caroline can like be pointed and direct at reporters in the briefing room, where you saw her look really upset or angry. I don't know. She just kind of gave me a happy warrior mentality in this. And so I think that that makes this a very hard role to fill. There are going to be a bunch of names floated, right? People are floating Katie Miller's name. People are going to float Trisha McLaughlin. I think that's a name you'll probably hear. I think Scott Jennings is absolutely a name you're going to hear. I think Anna Kelly, who's one of the deputies at the White House, Deputy White House Press Secretary, she actually was the state party communications director for the Wisconsin GOP previously. So she's got great swing state experience going into a midterm. I think she's probably maybe the least likely, but not to say impossible. Whoever it is has some of the biggest shoes in D.C. to fill. Truly.
I think you have to look at it. If I'm the White House, not that I'm one to give them advice, but if I'm looking
Sounds
at
like
it.
Sounds like you're about to.
You have to think about what that position is going to look and feel like if Democrats take back at least the House. Yeah. And the daily conversation turns to congressional investigations, Trump family investigations, subpoenas, impeachments, all those things, right? And that's why I think someone like Scott Jennings makes a lot of sense, because I think that when I look at what could lie ahead for the White House turning into next year, that is that person you want taking those questions, fielding those calls, trying to take control of some of these narratives are going to take shape, driven by Capitol Hill. It's going to be an investigation tsunami next year. Mm-hmm. And whoever you put in that position needs to be equipped to deal with that. So you're kind of down to, in that case to me, a Scott Jennings or someone like Jason Miller, frankly, you know, who again has a tremendous amount of experience, a lot of congressional experience. That's where I see that going.
One disagreement I'm going to have with you on that. I actually think the hardest part for both of them potentially getting that role is that they're both men. The president, yes. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
They're both fine.
No,
they're both good on camera. But I do think that's actually one of the hardest parts for this, is that the president likes having a female press secretary. That's just the honest truth. He likes having a female press secretary. Not to say he hasn't had a guy before. We all remember Sean Spicer. It's not to say he wouldn't do it again, but I do think that's likely the biggest impediment for somebody like a Scott Jennings, who also now has a book deal and is a contributor and hosts a radio show.
He'd be leaving a lot of money on the table.
Yeah. How much are you willing to give up in the pursuit of that role? But it is one of the biggest political communication roles in the world.
Yeah.
And
you can write your ticket after that. I put it this way. It will be very revealing to me if they end up picking someone like Scott, because it means that they realize that really the job is going to be very similar to, like, you're picking like a White House counsel. You're picking, a lawyer, because that's really what the job is going to be when the avalanche of investigations happen. That spokesperson, it's like it's your lead attorney in a lot of ways. And we do know that Trump likes men attorneys, representing him.
That's very true. A litigator of some kind, somebody with a law background. Yeah. I mean, I get that. Yeah.
We'll see
who they pick. But also, one other thing that you and I didn't talk about, it's completely separate. Did you see that El Sayed challenged Mike Rogers to a one-on-one football game? And I would love to know if it's even possible to play football one-on-one. There, you can play soccer one-on-one, basketball, tennis, badminton, all sorts of sports. But football's not a sport you can play one-on-one. You can do drills against each other, which I saw a former Obama staffer tweet like, oh, look, you can do one-on-one football. No, you're lining up for a drill is different than playing a football game. There is no way to play football one-on-one. Do you agree?
You have to have an all-time quarterback who is neutral, who is playing for both sides, I guess, is the only way you could do that.
Yeah,
question mark.
El Sayed said, well, we used to play one-on-one tackle football as kids. So you weren't playing football. You were just playing beat the shit out of each other. That's not a football game. You were just in, like, wrestling. You're just body slamming another dude for the sake of it. Also, like, I will say this. I think Mike Rogers could win that.
Well,
he's muscly, but not that big.
Well,
in terms of
lacks,
like, tackle football, I think Mike Rogers would stand a pretty good
chance. I think if you're going to challenge, if you're looking for a flex to challenge another person to a one-on-one contest, I think your best bet is probably UFC. I think that's what you should be challenging him to, a cage fight.
See? But instead, he picked football, and I think El Sayed looks so stupid. It's so stupid. You cannot play football one-on-one. Team sport.
I mean, I would love to see what a one-on-one football game looks like. So, like, I'm curious about what the spectacle could be. And I think they should do it at the home of the Detroit Lions, and, make it a must-see TV event on Peacock or something. And I would watch it. I would watch it.
I would watch it if someone could figure out how you play football one-on-one, but that is not how football is played.
If I were Mike Rogers' campaign, I would just respond back with, like, please send me said rules for one-on-one football, just to see what they come up with.
Right? Let's have a little fun in this. I think that's a good one. Okay. Sorry, that came to my head at the end there, and I was like, oh, we got to talk about this, because
that's a good one.
Laugh.
It makes me laugh. All right. Hey, almost at the weekend. We're almost at the weekend.
Yay. Well, that's it for us then, huh?
I guess that's it. We'll see what nonsense things await us next week. In the meantime, like, subscribe, share, tell people, listen, download, all the things that you need to do for the Party Lines podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Party on, party animals. Bye.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.